It is October 24th, and we are up to Perek Yud, the 10th chapter of Yechezkel. This is a continuation from last week's Perek, where you'll recall the episode where the Yechezkel witnessed the Ish Levush HaBadin, who was the Malach Gavriel, who was told to put a tav on the foreheads of those who did not do Averos, who did not sin. And then Hashem turned around and said that they should kill everybody, including those who had a tav on their foreheads. And we said the reason was because they could have been Moicha, they could have protested and did not. So now the story continues. He hasn't actually, well, we're about to see what happens on a more general scale. And we're continuing with, we're going to see references to the Malach Gavriel. We're also going to see a reference to the Malach, to the angel Michael. There's also now going to be a throwback to the first parak of Yechezkel. You remember the first parak of Yechezkel, which was very difficult to understand, all about the Merkava, all about the chariot of Hashem, with the different types of Malachim, the Chayos, and the Ofanim, and the four faces, and the four wings, and the four sides, and all that. So this is going to be a throwback. And the reason why we're going to have a throwback is there's going to be a change, a difference here from what we saw in the first parak. I mentioned this difference way back in the first parak, which is several months ago. Not quite a year ago, but several months ago. And I will repeat it here as we see it. So says the Pasuk in Yechezkel Aleph, Parak Yud Pasuk Aleph, first verse. And I saw and behold on the rakia, on the sky above the heads of the kruvim, ke'evan sapir, like a sapphire stone, kemare demus kisei, like the appearance of the form of a throne, near alehem, could be seen upon them. Here when it says kruvim, it does not refer to the Kruvim, to the cherubs that were in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that were in the Holy of Holies. Rather, when it says Kruvim over here, it is referring to the Chayos. The Chayos, those angels that are called Chayos, which we spoke about extensively in the first parak, now are being referred to as Kruvim, and we will see why presently. Pasuk Beis. Vayomer el ha'ish levush habadim, and he said, Hashem said to the man wearing white. Vayomer, he said, Bo el binos tagalgal, come into among the galgal. What is a galgal?
Wheel.
Which, what is that, what does that refer to? What else is called a wheel? The what? The feet of the malachim were round, that's true, but which, there was a malach that was round. The ofanim, which is another word for wheel. These ofanim, which are round malachim, are also called the galgal. So come in amongst the Galgal, because the angels are in the form of an actual chariot. You have the Chayos, and on the bottom of the Chayos, there are four Chayos, and each Chaya corresponds to one Ofan, one Galgal. So he says, come in amongst the Galgal, El Tachas Lakruv, underneath the Kruv, underneath the Chaya, Umalei Chafnecha Gachalei Esh, and fill up your hands with coals of fire. Chafnecha means your handful, your palm. Mibeinos la'kruvim, from among the kruvim. Uzrok al ha'ir, and throw it upon the city. That's what Yechezkel's reporting that he heard. Vayavo la'ino, and he came to my eyes. Yechezkel's watching the man dressed in white, which is the Malach Gavriel, now come to approach the Merkava, approach the chariot, and go amongst the wheels, and apparently there are coals over there, and to put his palm, he's being told to do this, he hasn't done it yet, to put his palm out and fill up his palm with, his handful, with coals, and to throw it on the city of Yerushalayim. Of course, that is meant to be symbolic of the burning of Yerushalayim. Gavriel, who is one of the Malachi Hasharis, one of the attending angels, is also the angel of Esh, of fire. He's the Malach of Esh. He's the Malach of fire. So here, if there's going to be fire burning the city, then he is to tease the angel who's going to come and take fire to go burn the city. It is, this is a sidebar, but just to point out to you, to bring you another example, well, Gavriel is used as the Malach of Esh. The Psukim tell us, the Pasuk tells us, in the beginning of Sefer Daniel, where there is an episode involving fire. What fire is described in the beginning of Sefer Daniel? Who knows? That is the story of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah being thrown into the fiery furnace for not bowing down in the days of what king? Nebuchadnezzar. So they get thrown into the fire. Hashem wants a malach to go down and cool off the fire in order that they should live. And Daniel reports that he sees in the fire Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and there's a fourth image, person, looks like a person, it's not a person, it's an angel, in there with them. And that is the malach. But Hashem made it a nes b'soch nes. He made it a miracle inside of a miracle. He didn't send down a malach, let's say, of water. Instead, he sent down the malach Gavriel, who is the malach of fire, that the tzidkus, the righteousness of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah was such that the fire was cooled down by the angel of fire himself. That's how great they were. And to make the miracle even greater, he sent the malach Gavriel, who is in charge of fire, who usually would make a fire stronger and worse, down to cool off the fire for Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Those are the psukim in Sefer Daniel. So here he tells Gavriel to go take the fire and throw it on the city. V'akuvim amdim mimin labayis, and the kuvim, which means now we're talking about the chayos, were standing to the right of the bayis, to the right of the Beis HaMikdash. Now the right means which direction? The south. On the south side of the Beis HaMikdash, b'volo ha'ish, when the man came. V'he'anon maleas ha'chatzer ha'pnimis, and the anon, the cloud, which represents Hashem himself, represents his Shechina, his divine presence, filled up the entire inner courtyard. So it's on the south side of the Beis HaMikdash. Va'yoram kevod Hashem me'al ha'kruv, and the honor of Hashem went up from above the kruv, from above the cherub, al miftan ha'bayis, to the stoop of the house. This is describing the movement of Hashem's Shekhinah, which we already talked about in the last parak. This is that same movement being described, where the Shekhinah moved from the kruv, here it means the kruv of the Beis HaMikdash, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the Holy of Holies. From there, the Shekhinah rises up and moves out to the front of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, to the stoop of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. As we said last week, there are going to be 10 distinct movements of the Shekhinah from the inside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, eventually leaving Yerushalayim completely, which is meant to be symbolic of the destruction as the Shekhinah slowly but surely incrementally moves away. And this is the first one. Vayimolei habayis es ha'anan, the house was full with the cloud of Hashem. Ve'hachatzer mala es nolak var Hashem, and the chatzer, the courtyard, was filled with the light of the honor of Hashem. The kol kanfei ha'kruvim nishma, and the sound of the wings of the kruvim was heard ad hechatzer hachitzonot, to the outer courtyard. Kekol kel shagai betabro, like the sound of Hashem himself when he speaks. It was an extremely loud sound. The wings of the kruvim, as the merkava, as the chariot of Hashem, lifted up and moved to a new location, the wings of the kruvim flapped, and that created a huge sound. Now, who remembers what were the wings used for? Not to fly. They also used to fly, but right, to praise Hashem, for Shira. That's what they're used for. And so here, the wings are being used as the Shekhinah moves, and it goes, and this sound is an incredibly loud sound, and it goes until the Chatzer HaChitzonah, to the outer courtyard. Rashi points out in the name of Chazal that the sound was so loud it should have gone all over the place. But the sound went throughout the whole Beis HaMikdash, throughout the inner courtyard, throughout the outer courtyard, and then stopped. Meaning that if you were standing outside the outer courtyard, you wouldn't hear it. If you set foot right inside, you would hear an incredibly loud sound. And nace, that the sound would go and stop right at the entrance of the chatzer. This is a nace that took place also in the Mishkan, that when Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu, it was an extremely loud sound, and it went into Moshe's ears when he was standing in the Mishkan, but you couldn't hear it outside the Mishkan. It was a nace that it stopped right there. Why would that be? Why would it stop? That's true. That's correct. That's why Hashem made it stop. But what would be the method by which it stopped? I mean, obviously Hashem stopped it, but why would it stop at that point? Let me ask it that way. Why would it stop at that particular point? Okay, because the holiness only goes so far. So where the holiness ends, that's where the sound ends. Because the sound is a holy sound, and therefore it only goes so far. Anyway, we can't hear the sounds of the Malachim. Why not? Because we are in a physical world, and there is a barrier between us and the spiritual world. We get into it sort of somehow in some way. After death, of course, we're into it. After the Tchias HaMeisim will be part of it. But right now, there is a barrier between us. We don't hear it because we're physical beings. When there was the Beis HaMikdash was so intertwined with the spiritual realm that there were sounds that came from the spiritual realm that you could hear in the Beis HaMikdash but nowhere else. And it would stop at the entrance because that's where the Kedusha ended.
Why it has to say it was like the voice of God speaking.
It's telling us how loud it was.
There's no physical metaphor that could do.
Okay. That's a fair question. You're bringing up the point that it seems that Yechezkel is choosing this analogy because there is some connection between the sound of the Kruvim's wings and the voice of Hashem himself. Okay, that's fair. It must. I don't know what it is, but it's a good point as well. It must have to do with that name of Hashem. Very good. Yeah.
Why do you have a salt, a hold, and to see with your own eyes? It seems redundant three times over.
Where are you reading?
The beginning it says, I saw and they beheld on their plants, and then later it says that he saw with his eyes.
By Avolaina, he came in front of my eyes.
Right. So why
first it says
the eyes.
First it says I saw and behold.
To behold is to see.
Yeah, but you see that phrase all the time. Behold means in the Hine, the way the Chumash and the Navi uses it is like something to notice. I'm looking. Behold.
Okay.
Right.
And why did he
see with his eyes for you? Right. So by Avolaina means and he came in front of my eyes. In front of my eyes, he came. I don't know why it's repeated. It's a good question. I don't know why it repeats that. It seems like it's drawing attention to the fact that he saw the Malach come forward. That's a good point. I don't know why. Pasuk Vav. Your questions are all good questions. It's just a question of what I have answers to and what I don't. So, but they're all good questions.
Excuse me. It seems like when he says, behold, it's a sudden thing.
Yeah.
It's not that you're seeing and you're seeing again. It materialized before.
Behold means that it was something to look at. It was something notable. Right. Vayhi bitzavo soeth ha'ish levush habadim. And it was when he commanded the man who was wearing white. Lamar saying, kach esh mi beinos ta'gagal, take fire from amongst the wheel. Mi beinos ta'kruvim, from amongst the kruvim, which is the chayos. Vayavo vayamod, and he came and he stood etzel ha'ofan next to the wheel. I don't know why in some cases it uses the word galgal, and sometimes it uses the word ofan. They both refer to that angel. Obviously, if it has two different names, they have a different nuance. I don't know the difference. Vayishlach ha'kruv es yadol mi beinos ta'kruvim, and the kruv, now, this pasuk is very important. What did Hashem say? That Gabriel should do what?
Take calls.
Okay, but it says, Vayishlach ha'kruv es yado, the kruv, the chaya himself, sent his hand, mi beinos ha'kruvim, amongst the kruvim, elo esh, to the fire, asher beinos ha'kruvim, that was amongst the kruvim, vayison, he lifted it up, vayitein el chafnei levush habadim, and he put it into the handful, the palms, of the man wearing white, vayikach, and he took it, vayitze, and he went out. This is not exactly what Hashem said to do. Hashem told Gabriel to actually pick up the coals. Instead, the kruv picks up the coals and puts it into the hands of Gabriel. Vayera lakuvim tabnis yad adam tachas kanfehem, and it was seen, it was appeared to the kuvim, a form of the hand of the hand of a man underneath their wings. Normally, these hands were covered by the wings, but because it reached in to take the coals, you could see its hand. Vo'era, and I saw, v'nei arba'a ofanim etzel ha'kuvim, and there were four wheel angels next to the kuvim, next to the chayos. Ofan echad etzel ha'kuv echad, one ofan corresponding to one kruv. V'ofan echad etzel ha'kuv echad, and the other ofan corresponding to the other kruv. Umar'ei ha'ofanim ke'ein evan tashish, and the appearance of the ofanim was like a marble stone. Umarehem dmus echad arbatam, and their appearance was one form to all four of them. Kasher yeh ha'ofan besoch ha'ofan, like it was one wheel inside of another wheel. Rashi in the first parak explained to us that meant that the wheel could roll in any direction. It was not a wheel, it was actually a sphere. A wheel inside of a wheel, so it can roll in any direction. Belechtam al arbas rivehem yelechu, when they went to any of their four sides. Lo yusabu belechtam, they would not turn, meaning obviously a wheel would turn, but it wouldn't turn this way. It wouldn't rotate, let's say, when they moved. Because the way that the head would turn after it, they would go, they would not rotate when they went, which means they didn't, because the wheel could turn in any direction, therefore they simply rolled in that direction. They had no need to rotate their bodies. And all of their flesh, whatever that means for an angel, and their torso, videhem, and their hands, v'chanfehem, and their wings, v'ofanim, m'leim, einayim, saviv, and the ofanim were full of eyes all around, le'abatam, ofanehem, to all four of their ofanim. I hope you're following this. Le'ofanim, lahem, panim, le'echad, for the ofanim, excuse me, I skipped the page, le'ofanim, lahem, korah, hagagal, be'oznai. To the Ofanim, to them, they were called the Galgal in my ears. Meaning they were referred to not only as Ofanim, but they were also referred to as Galgal, says Yechezkel. Again, calling attention to the change in name from Ofanim to Galgal. Yeah, that's true. That's interesting. That's a good point. Ve'arba'ah, of course you're thinking of the Rakevet. Ve'arba'ah Ofanim le'achad, and there were four faces to each one. Pnei ha'echad, pnei ha'kruv, the face of one was the face of a cherub, ufnei ha'sheni, ufnei adam, and the face of the second was the face of man. V'ashlishi, pnei aryeh, the third was the face of a lion. V'aravi, pnei nesher, and the fourth was the face of an eagle. What is wrong with this pasuk? Where's the ox? Okay, which one replaces the ox? The cherub, the kruv. The way in the first parak it says shor adam aryeh nesher, ox, man, lion, and eagle. Here the ox is replaced with the kruv. And this I pointed out to you in the first parak that you remember, right? Who said right?
I was thinking
of one of the chet ha'egel. That's right. Excellent. Because of the chet ha'egel, the sin of the egel is of the golden calf, which is symbolized by an ox or by anything from the bovine family. And when Yechezkel saw that on the Merkava, on the chariot of Hashem, he davened that it should be changed, because it makes the sin of the eagle be remembered upstairs, and that's bad for us. So he davened that it be changed to a kruv, to a cherub, which connotes a child who has never sinned. And Hashem listened to the davening of Yechezkel and changed it. And so that is why this whole thing is repeated. Because since he is seeing he's seeing the chayos with a different face, one may have made the mistake and thought that this Merkava is different than the Merkava mentioned in the first parak. One might have thought that there are two chariots. There's the one in the first parak, which Hashem uses in some cases, and there's the one in the tenth parak, which Hashem uses in other cases. Or, God forbid, one might have thought that there are two powers. One using one Merkava, one using another Merkava. And so therefore, this whole thing is repeated over here. The appearance was the same, except for this one exception. And Yechezkel himself will tell us, this is the same chariot, the same Merkava that I saw back in the first parak. Don't think it's different. Rather, I got it changed for the benefit of the Jewish people. Yeah?
When this was written, did it have any
he wrote it down?
The Nevi'im are written like the Torah, but there are no Nekudos. The Nekudos are Torah Sheba'al Peh.
I don't know that it's Galgal, not Gilgal.
Because of Torah Sheba'al Peh. That's the oral Torah. That's true for any word. That's true. And there are many words that you could read in several different ways. But because that's always Torah Sheba'al Peh. That's one of the answers as to why you can't learn Torah Sheba'al Peh without Torah Sheba'al Peh. There's no such thing as a written Torah because the Nekudos are also Torah Sheba'al Peh. So you can't possibly read the words without Torah Sheba'al Peh. You also don't know without Torah Sheba'al Peh that you read it right to left and not left to right or up and down or in a circle. There's no way to know. You don't even know the sounds that the letters make without Torah Sheba'al Peh. How do you know that a bez makes a b sound and a resh makes a r sound? That's all Torah Sheba'al Peh also. So Torah Sheba'al Peh, besides the Gemara, which is the body of Torah Sheba'al Peh, is also all of the nuances of how to read what's in front of us.
Would that change in the Shia times?
What?
The whole meaning of everything. Put different letters together here, there.
In the Torah, there may be additional meanings that are understood. But I don't believe that the Torah is going to change. I don't think it could be the way the spacing of the Torah is going to be.
I have another question. What state of being is Jesus for now?
Right now he's seeing a vision. That was introduced back. When a Navi would see a vision, they would appear outwardly to be not themselves. If you would see a Navi while they're having a vision, they would look like they are somehow they're not all there. That's the way they would look. What's that? I don't know, in a trance, they would look like they weren't fully in control of what was going on. They would look a little... No, we had him being told to stand up. He fell on his face and he was told to stand up. We had that as well. So apparently he could stand. I just want to read through this a little bit quickly because this is going to be a repeat from the first parak. And I don't want to get bogged down in these, which we don't understand these psukim anyway. Vayeromu, there's a lot to talk about here. Hopefully we'll finish it tonight. There's really a great deal to speak about in this parak. Vayeromu ha-kuvim, and the kuvim went lifted up. Hi ha-chaya, that is the chaya asher isi ben har-kavar that I saw on the river Kavar. It's the same chaya, even though it's a different face, it's the same chaya. Uvelechas ha-kuvim, and when the kuvim went, yachu ha-ofanim etzvam, the ofanim would go with them. Uvises ha-kuvim es kanfeihem, larume al-haaretz, and when the kuvim would lift up their wings to go above the ground, lo yusabu ha-ofanim, the ofanim would not turn, gam heim mei etzvam, also them from being next to the kuvim. In other words, they would accompany the kuvim. Be'amdam ya'amodu, when the kuvim would stop, so would the ofanim. Uveromam, and when they lifted up, yeromu osam, they would lift themselves up. In other words, the ofanim would lift up. Ki ruach ha-chaya bahem, for the spirit of the chaya was in the ofanim. Vayetzei kvon Hashem me'al miftan ha-bayis. Okay, now this is a new thing. Vayetzei kvon Hashem me'al miftan ha-bayis, and the honor of Hashem went out from the miftan ha-bayis, from the stoop of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Vayamod al ha-kruvim, and went on top of the kruvim, back on top of the chariot. This is going to be the second movement of the Shekhinah. First it moved from the Kodesh HaKadoshim to the entranceway of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now the Shekhinah gets on top of the chariot, whatever that means. And next Pasuk Yotef 19, Vayisu HaKuvim es kanfeihem, the Kuvim lifted up their wings, Vayeromu min ha'aretz, and lifted up from the ground, Le'enai to my eyes, there you go, to my eyes again, Vitzeisam when they went out. The Ofanim Lumasam and the Ofanim were next to them. Vayamod Pesach Shar Beis Hashem Kadmoni, and it stood at the entranceway of the gate of the house of Hashem on the east side. Uchvor Elokei Yisrael Alehem Miomala, and the honor of the God of Israel was upon them from above. So where did it move to? It moved to the entranceway that was the entranceway to the Heichal, to the Kodesh. So, I'm going to move over here to give you the description, because this was the direction we took it in before. The Kodesh HaKadoshim is here, with, of course, the Aron, and the physical Kruvim in here. That's where the Shekhinah of Hashem was normally. It first lifted up and moved to the entranceway between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKodeshim. The Kodesh HaKodeshim has the Aron, has the Ark. The Kodesh has the Menorah, the Shulchan, the table, the Mizbeach, one of the two altars. So now it's in the entranceway. Now we see it move again from here to further, going further east to the entranceway from the Azara, from the inner courtyard to the Heichal, to the Kodesh. Remember we said that when you went inside of the outer court, you entered the wall of the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, you were in a large outer courtyard, and then there was a wall surrounding an inner courtyard that was not roofed. The roofed part was the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now Hashem Shekhinah has moved to the entranceway of the Kodesh. So it's now at the entranceway from where you go from not being roofed to being roofed. That's where it is. That's where the Shekhinah has moved to. That's the second movement. The last chapter was the movement of the last chapter, and the first one described in this chapter the same movement. That's the same one, but this is a new one. That's the same chaya Yecheskel repeats to us. It's the same chaya that I saw underneath the God of Yisrael on the river Kavar. And I knew that they were chuvim. It's the same one. I knew that they were the same chuvim. I knew those chayos were chuvim. They changed their face from shor to a kruv. Arba, arba'a panim le'echad, four faces to each one. Ve'arba kenafayim le'echad, each one had four wings. Udmus yidei adam tachas kanfahem, and the appearance of the form of the hand of man underneath their wings. Udmus pnehem heima ha'panim asher ra'isi al nahar kivar, and the appearance of their faces was the same faces that I saw on the river Kivar. Marehem ve'osam, their appearance, and them, ish alev v'ponav yilechu, each one, each man, each one would go in the direction of its face. Okay. Till there. Yeah, so that's what Rashi says. The whole thing is repeated solely for this purpose, to tell us it's the same ones. Don't make a mistake. Yeah. Yeah.
If they have the four faces and they're going in whatever direction without turning, so when you're looking at them, do you see different faces depending on where these different angels are moving? Or are they all like
they're all facing the same. All of the same form is in one direction. That's what we saw.
Carbon copies.
That's right. There are only four of them. There are only four chayos, and each one had the same faces in each direction. That's right. Yeah.
And I apologize. I thought the chayos were jumping up and down.
They were back then.
So, are there still chayos jumping up and down, and
then
the same, in other words, the same type came down also?
It's the same chayos, and the same
ofanim. It's the same chayos,
yeah.
But are they still jumping?
I don't know. Not, it's not described over here.
There's not a lot of them.
There was only four. There are four chayos and four ofanim.
But there's a difference. Before, when they were jumping, they were trying to close the Shekhinah.
Right.
Here, the Shekhinah is moving.
Right. Here, what's being described is kivyachol, if or possible, Hashem is as if he's getting on his chariot to move. Now, we know, of course, he doesn't need a chariot in the first place. And anyway, the whole thing is only being said for us to understand. It's only meant to be some kind of symbolism for us. And what does he need a chariot for? I mean, Hashem doesn't need to travel anywhere, and he can travel without, you know, whatever that means. But that's what's being described. It's kiviyachol. It's as if it will be a king that is flesh and blood that is leaving his inner sanctuary, getting on his chariot and traveling from the inside of the Kodesh HaKodeshim to the entranceway. Then getting back on the chariot and traveling from there to the entranceway of the Kodesh. Each one of the movements is going to be as if he's getting on the chariot. Now, we have, as I said, a great deal to talk about. We have to discuss this business with the Coles and Gavriel, but let's make some more general observations before we get into that. Hashem's Shekhinah was generally located in the Kodesh HaKodashim, in the Holy of Holies. Now, who got to see Hashem's Shekhinah? Okay, the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. The Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur was able to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Except for that, nobody could ever go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Mishnah describes to us what happened if there was a repair that had to be made inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Mishnah neglects to tell us how they would know there was a repair that needed to be made in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But if there was a repair that needed to be made, they actually had skylights in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and they would lower, like an elevator, they would lower a box with the workmen, the craftsmen in it. The box would be closed on three sides so they couldn't look anywhere but in the direction where they could see the problem. And they were lowered down to work on whatever the problem was, and then they were lifted out of there. That's the way the Mishnah describes it. It was not something that anybody could just see whenever they wanted. So the Shekhinah is in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And that's where the Shekhinah resides. The Kohen Gadol sees, he doesn't actually see Hashem, but he sees whatever there is that a human being can see. If the Kohen Gadol deserves it, he'll see it on Yom Kippur in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Shekhinah is now leaving the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is a bad thing. That means that the Shekhinah is leaving us. So it travels from the Kodesh HaKadoshim to the Kodesh. Who can walk into the Kodesh? Not Levim. Any Kohen. Any Kohen could walk into the Kodesh, provided that they were pure, and they were and also you couldn't go in just because he felt like it. You had to go in to do an avodah, to do a service. But they could. Any Kohen who was fit to do service and was doing a service could walk into the Kodesh. So now Hashem's Shekhinah has now become revealed not only to the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, but also to any Kohen that walks into the Kodesh. The second movement moves the Shekhinah from there to the entranceway between the Azara, the inner courtyard, and the Kodesh. Who could see that entranceway between the Azara and the Kodesh? Any Jew. Any Jew who was Tohar could come to the Beis HaMikdash, and even though none of us could walk, I'm not a Kohen or a Levi, none of us could walk beyond a certain point, but we could still look and see the entranceway from the Azara into the Heichal, into the Kodesh. So if Hashem's Shekhinah is there, assuming we had the eyes to see it, we deserved it, we could perceive Hashem's Shekhinah. The same way the Kohen Gadol could perceive it on Yom Kippur. So the Levim sing on the steps further away. Yeah. So. No.
Like last week, he got rid of us all.
That was foreshadowing. That hasn't happened. And we're talking 5 years away still, 6 years away before that.
But I'm saying it's in chronological order. In other words, is this vision going to happen after that?
No. This has to happen first. We can't be. The Beis HaMikdash can't be damaged until the Shekhinah leaves. So this. Well, some people were killed, but the people who were around the Beis HaMikdash weren't killed in full. So how does this make sense? How does it make sense that if what's being described is the Shekhinah departing, why is it that he becomes more and more revealed the further he leaves the Kodesh HaKadoshim? Does that make any sense?
Maybe he's giving more opportunity to the Jews to do.
Okay, so you're explaining why that might be. The reason why Hashem might want to do that is to show them that he's leaving.
To give us an opportunity.
Right. Let's think about this purely in human terms. There is a Melech Basar Adam, a king of flesh and blood. And the king is in his inner sanctuary. Now, most people do not get the audience to go into the king. You never get to see the king in his inner sanctuary unless you're a very special, you're a VIP of some sort, or whatever it is, or you're a personal friend. You're not going to get in to see the king. So when do most of the people see the king? When he's traveling. When he comes in and goes out. When he's moving, what's that?
From afar.
But when he leaves his palace, that's when the Hamonam, that's when the subjects are going to see the king. Even today, you have a better chance of seeing the president when he's in a motorcade traveling. You just happen to be in the right place at the right time. You'll see the motorcade pass by. You're less likely to see the president in the White House. Well, how often does anybody get into the White House to see the president? You will more likely see the king when they are coming out or going in. So that means if the king wants to leave, wants to forsake his subjects, he's going to leave and leave his subjects to the wolves. But he has to walk out amongst the subjects. There's no way to do it otherwise. Hashem is simply doing that which is would normally be done if he would be a king that's flesh and blood. He's walking out amongst his subjects. It happens to be that when a king does that, you get to see him. If you get to see him, then you're influenced. You're influenced more than when he's in his inner sanctuary. So it's true what Mrs. Wittenberg said, that that clearly one of the points being made over here is that Hashem is saying, look what I'm doing. Hashem could have just disappeared. He could have just gone up instead of out. Hashem could have gone up from heaven to heaven, like we say on Yom Kippur, Hashem Hu Elokim, and he goes back upstairs. But that's not what Hashem did. Hashem exited as if he was getting on his motorcade and going out. Yeah. Okay, so you're suggesting a second explanation. Both are correct. A second explanation that in addition for us to see that he is leaving, in order that we should get the message, there is another point being made over here that Hashem is saying, I'm not forsaking you, meaning I am leaving the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. There's going to be punishment here. But I'm amongst the people. I step out amongst the people. You, the Jews, are going to be dragged into Gullus, into exile. I am with you. I am moving along with you into exile. Just as Yechoniah, the king, was dragged out of the Beis HaMikdash through one of the gates of the Beis HaMikdash and out to Babel, to Babylonia. That would have been 5 years before this episode when the leadership, including Yechezkel, got taken. Yechoniah got taken from the Beis HaMikdash. That's where he ran to. That's where he was when they grabbed him, when they caught him. And he was dragged out that way. But he was with the people. Hashem is saying, I am going out with the people. The people are leaving. I'm going to be leaving with them. I don't think it's so linear. I don't think so. I don't know the time frame, but I don't think it's that specific.
Because I'm just wondering if he stayed longer where only the Kohanim could see him, and then like it was quick movement from there on out.
I don't know.
I mean, that's what a king of flesh and blood.
Right.
A lot quicker if they get to where there's no people.
Right, but here it seems that he keeps getting on the Merkabah and then getting off again, because it's talking about him getting back onto the Merkabah. So I don't know. It sounds like he stopped. Sounds like he went and stopped. Camped. Got back on, stopped, and camped. Because you have the other element as well. If they would do teshuva, he would turn around and go back. So there is that. Otherwise, he should have left in one shot. Even if he's going to go in this direction, but go in one time.
But, we have opportunity.
Right. He's going to stop along the way.
Number 10 is significant.
The
number 10 stops.
Yeah, right. That's going to be... Okay, that could be the Meraglim, but the number 10 anyway is going to be a complete number. That there's a complete leaving of the Shekhinah from the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah. It is also significant to note that which Yechezkel gets the shor changed to a kruv in order that Hashem should not remember or shouldn't react to the Egel HaZahav. When does Yechezkel get this change made? When he davens, which is at this time frame when the Shekhinah is leaving. Not at the time, let's say, of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, when everybody was learning Torah, that there wasn't a kid that didn't know all of Torah inside, outside, and backwards and forwards. Or in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, or the time of David HaMelech, when everybody was doing the right thing. That's not when Hashem's Merkava, where the face of the shor gets changed to the face of a kruv. Rather, it's when the walls are falling down around our ears, that's when Yechezkel gets the face changed. That's also very significant. We know with the Egel Chazav, with the golden calf, that Hashem says at the end of the golden calf, Uviyom Pakti Ufakati Alechem Chataschem. When I remember, I will remember upon you your sin. Rashi explains the name of Chazal that the Egel Hazav, unfortunately, is Shamor Ledoros. It is Hashem has it, protects it, watches it for generations, which means that although Hashem did not punish us severely at the time of the Egel Hazav. At the time of the Meraglim, we got punished severely. Time of the Meraglim, there, the spies, we didn't go into Eretz Yisrael. We had to wander another 38 years. The time of the Egel, although there were some temporary things that happened, but we weren't severely punished. Hashem says, I'm going to hold on to this sin. And whenever the Jewish people are punished in the future, there will always be an element of the Egel Hazav that comes along with that punishment. So that whatever punishment then happens, even if the Jews are being punished for something else entirely, so the punishment that comes, so then 98% of that punishment may be for what happened at that time. 2% of the punishment is because of the Egel Hazav. Every time there's a punishment, some of that punishment is really because of the Egel Hazav. That's going to be true in the time of David HaMelech, in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, in the time of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. In the time when the Jews were doing the right thing, that's not going to change. Hashem is going to remember the Egel Hazav whenever He needs to punish the Jewish people. There's going to be an element. So that when there was a famine in the days of David HaMelech to punish the people, there was an element of punishment because of the Egel Hazav there as well, besides whatever the sin was at the time. And the same thing for whatever other punishments there were throughout the time of the Beis HaMikdash. But at this point, Yechezkel gets it changed. That would seem counterintuitive. Here, where there's the ultimate punishment, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, now is the time you would think when Hashem will incorporate some of the punishment of the Egel Hazav. But instead, Yechezkel davens, and it gets changed. Why would that be?
I think it would have been too much.
Okay, so perhaps the reason is because it would have been too much. At this point, when the people are really going to get hit hard, when they're really getting punished, there's a terrible punishment that's happening, it's at this time where there can't be an element of the Egel Hazav. Now, I don't mean to say that there's no element whatsoever, because it sounds like from the Pasuk back in Parashas Kisisa, that there will always be an element of the Egel Hazav. But that element has to be diminished. If my analogy or my example was correct, that in any given punishment, 2% of it is from the Egel Hazav, that would be true at the time of the when we're doing the right thing. When we're really acting incorrectly and the base of Megiddo is destroyed, that 2% would have to be cut down to maybe 0.2%. There would have to be only a very, very, very small element that has to do with the Egel Hazav. Otherwise, Chas V'Shalom, then there may be nothing left of the Jewish people. So here, just when things are really getting bad, that's when Yechezkel gets the face changed. Yeah.
Not only that, the crew then were supposed to show the love that Hashem had with the people. So when they're really down, He wants to show them that He still loves them.
Okay, very good.
That's why the ox went, but why the crew came.
Very good. Yeah, that is a good answer. That is a good explanation. In addition, as we mentioned, a crew conjures up the picture of a child that has never sinned, innocence. And that is to bring up the point that the Jews, in a certain sense, are still very righteous, although they're doing things that are bad. But the Jews still have a lot of righteousness amongst them, and that should be remembered. Hashem doesn't forget that either. And so that is remembered here as the punishment is taking place. We mentioned last week that Yechezkel's davening did have an effect, even though it did not prevent the Beis HaMikdash from being destroyed. The Beis HaMikdash is destroyed in the end, but it does have an effect. This is one of them. One of them is that the Pnei Hashor, the face of the ox, changes to the face of a kruv, of a cherub. The other effect of his davening is the description of what happens with Gavriel. When Gavriel goes and he takes the coal, when he's supposed to take the coal, and instead the kruv picks up the coal and hands it to Gavriel. I will tell you how the Gemara describes it. Make sure we have enough time to do this entire thing. I'll tell you what the Gemara says. Now remember how we described stories involving Malachim last week. Remember we said, Malachim do not have free will. They do not make decisions. Whatever they're doing means that Hashem programmed them to do it. So if the Gemara describes a Malach that doesn't listen to Hashem, that means the Malach was told not to listen to Hashem, which means it is listening to Hashem. But it's trying to show us something. And that's why that's what Hashem told it to do. So bear that in mind as I give you the following depiction the Gemara gives of what happened over here. The Gemara says that Hashem said to Michael, to Michael, your nation, the Jewish nation, has sinned. They need to be destroyed. And Michael said to Hashem, the Malach Michael said to Hashem, the tzaddikim are okay. And Hashem said no, as we described last week, because they should have protested and they did not. They should have given Musar, they should have admonished the sinners and they did not, therefore they get punished as well. Then Hashem tells Gabriel, go take coals and throw it on the city. Gabriel goes and he does not listen to Hashem in two ways. First of all, he doesn't pick up the coals himself. He has the chaya, the kruv, pick up the coals, hand it to him, and then he throws it on the city. What does that do? Think of a physical case. What would that do? Okay, it would cool them off. It will cool off those coals, because if it goes from hand to hand, it's going to cool down a little bit. Plus, he waited 5 years. So a little over five. I mean, this episode takes place, the Gemara actually says he waited 6 years. This episode takes place in the sixth year of that 11-year span between the two goluses. So you have a little more than 5 years. He waited, and then he threw it in the city. Obviously, waiting is also going to cool down those coals. So Gabriel, so to speak, had mercy on the Jewish people, and then he threw it on the city. That's what he did. Obviously, if Gabriel had mercy, he can't himself decide to have mercy. Hashem has to tell him to have mercy. Then, if you recall the last pasuk of the last parak, of last week's parak, the parak test, the ninth chapter, at the end of that chapter, it says that the man who was dressed in white, which is Gabriel, returned before Hashem, saying, I did all that you told me to do. So the Gemara tells us that the Malach Gabriel was taken before the heavenly court and given 60 lashes of fire. And the Gemara says, why? Because they said to him, one or the other, either do what Hashem said to do, he told you to pick up the coals yourself and throw it on the city right away. So either do what he said to do, or don't do anything. But don't do something that's kind of halfway and then lie about it, and then come and say, I did everything Hashem told me to do. You didn't do everything Hashem told you to do. You did something different. So the Gemara actually doesn't stop on the lying part. The Gemara says, don't come back and say that you did what Hashem told you to do when you didn't do what Hashem told you to do. So either or, what's this business of straddling the fence of, yeah, picking up the coals, you don't really want to pick up the coals. So, okay, I'll do it, the crew will give it to me. I don't want to throw it in the city, I'll wait a few years and then I'll throw it in the city. Then don't do anything at all. What's this business of being neither here nor there? And therefore, Gabriel was given lashes, 60 lashes of fire. Then, Andy Lulz-Durgers, then, the Gemara says, that they brought Doviel. Have you heard of the Malach Doviel? No, me neither, not until I read this Gemara. The Gemara Yuma. Doviel is the Malach of the nation of Paras, of the Persians. The Persians are compared to a dove, to a bear. So Doviel is the Malach of the Persians. Every country, every nation has its own Malach that corresponds to it. The Malach of Paras is Doviel. Paras, the Malach Doviel came, and it was given 20 in it's the this is in Sefer Daniel. He describes how the Malach Doviel came before me, and I saw him there for 21 days, which means that Paras was given 21 different kingdoms. It was given power over 21 different kingdoms. At the end of that time, after Doviel was in place of Gabriel, they replaced Gabriel with Doviel for 21 days. After that time, Doviel was trying to destroy the Jewish people. So Doviel says to Hashem, give me power over the Jews. He's granted it. Then he says, give me power even over the Talmidei Chachamim, even over the Torah scholars. And he's given a shtar, he's given a document. The document is written to give him power over it. As he's going to get the document signed, that it should be final, Gavriel steps forward and says, Hashem. Well, he doesn't. He says, how could this be? How could Doviel be given power over the Talmidei Chachamim? The wives of the Talmidei Chachamim are menadados shina me'einehem. They push sleep away from their eyes. None of you know what I'm talking about, right? They push sleep away from their eyes, right? Which woman, Jewish woman, doesn't push sleep away from her eyes? Pushes sleep away from their eyes in order that their husbands and their sons should be able to learn Torah. So how could Doviel be given power over the Talmidei Chachamim? And it says they didn't listen to him. Even so, they were going to sign the document. Then Doviel said, Daniel, got to get all these names straight, Daniel, the Navi, Daniel, if you would put him on a scale and take all the Chachmei Umos Ha'olam, all of the wise men of the nations of the world, and put them on the other side of the scale, won't he outweigh all of them? Isn't he greater than all of the Chachmei Umos Ha'olam, all of the wise people of the nations of the world? After he said that, after Gabriel said that, Hashem said, Mi zeh melamed zchus habanai? Who's the one who is speaking highly of my children, who's trying to defend my children? And they said, it's Gabriel. So Hashem said, it's Gabriel. Bring Gabriel before me. We will now throw out Doviel and replace him back. We'll give Gabriel back his old post. And Gabriel steps in and retakes his old position. And Doviel, with that document that was going to give him control over the Talmidei Chachamim, that document never gets signed. And the Gemara has a couple of explanations. What happened to the document? One explanation is that Doviel swallows the document, and when he swallows it, the writing becomes erased. Isn't that a great story?
Yeah.
Tell it to your kids. Right? Yeah, that's one of those stories. Okay, so obviously what we need to do, and we don't have time tonight to do it, is to go through this story and explain what it's all about. What are we talking about over here? Gabriel not listening to Hashem, and then being whipped for not listening to Hashem, and then Doviel taking over, and then the wives of the Talmidei Chachamim, and then Daniel outweighing the Umos Ha'olam. What is this all about? So we have to go through this story in detail and understand this all connection. So I cut you off. You had a question.
I just wanted to know, since when do the Malachim have, they decide they don't want to do
something? Right, exactly. Right. The rule of thumb here is going to be that every single part of this story is orchestrated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That has to be. Because angels do not have free will. Every single part of this story, even though the way the story is being told, it sounds like the Malachim are making decisions, but we know that can't possibly be the case. Every single part is orchestrated. But it's orchestrated in a way that appears in this manner so that we can understand and we can learn from it. And that's what we're going to have to do next week. We're going to begin with this story. We'll review the story next week and go through it detail by detail to explain it. I would hope next week that we also get to start Perek Yud Aleph, the 11th chapter, but at least we have to start with this story. Doviel. He is the Persian angel.
And then he doesn't want to kill all the Jews today.
Good question. Okay, I don't know. I can't tell you that. Yes. Coming from the word dove, bear, the bear of God. Doviel. That's what it would be. I hope a lot of things bother you.
The angels are just doing what Hashem says. But at the beginning in Bereshit, Hashem asks the angels, So that's supposed to teach you something. So that should that teach us to only get opinions from people that we know are going to rubber stamp what we want?
Then the angels say, don't create men.
But they say that only because Hashem told them to say that.
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course.
Right?
But But it's meant to teach us something about man's the creation of man, that there's a strong reason not to create man. That if Hashem would, if there would be a third party to ask, that third party would have very good reason to say, don't create man. That's what that Medrash is teaching us. And the question is, why? Yeah, right? Okay, good. Good. That's showing us, it's also showing us that in order to get the Torah, you have to have some spiritual connection. That's also. Or why is it that we get the Torah over the angels? That's also the part of it. Yeah, there's a lot. Huh? We talked about that a little bit. Yeah. We I don't remember. We didn't speak about something. I don't know if we spoke about it. I don't know if I'm... Yeah.